in this room tonight with you. This is the church where I grew up, the church building where I worshiped during all my teenage years. I sat right over there, well in view of Mr. Fontenot's eye as he preached sermon after sermon. The annex building out there, is that what we still call it? The annex building, which has gotten smaller, I think, or something. Saw that coming in. Just really special, special times. When Summer and I first got married, we worshiped here together. We know just about every person in the room tonight, either from our association here at Humble or folks who visited from other churches in the area. There's a little joke going around that I've preached at every church in the area, like as a full-time preacher. But those who were at those congregations have come, and it just means a tremendous amount. My family is here on both sides, and it just, this is it. This is what it was about. Josh's comments, perfect tonight. This is what we want to do. We want to be together. What we're here to do, as was noted, is study the Scripture. And what I need you to do tonight is open your Bibles to Hebrews chapter 12. Almost all of our Bible study and reading tonight will be from Hebrews chapter 12, with only two or three exceptions to that. So we need everyone to have their Bibles open there as we pursue this study. There are three verses in particular that draw our attention tonight. Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verse 22, and we'll start there in just a moment. We have a series of lessons going on this week. It's sort of packed in tight. We have one lesson tonight. Let me know if I mess this up. Two lessons tomorrow. Three lessons on Sunday. Four on... We're quitting on Sunday. Okay, so there are six lessons. Each lesson, I hope you'll find, will sort of dig into one particular New Testament text and really stand on its own, but we'll also be tying all six of them together under one common theme. You are about to discover that theme in Hebrews chapter 12, beginning in verses 22 and following. Let's read together. But you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to myriads of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn who are enrolled in heaven, and to God, the judge of all, and to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, and to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood which speaks better than the blood of Abel. You have a description there of Mount Zion and what the experience is like when you come to Mount Zion. And while the description itself is beautiful, the most mesmerizing part of it are the people, the characters who are present there at Zion, from God the Father to the Son to the myriads of angels, the saints that have gone before. It is a beautiful scene, and it is the topic of our study tonight. Here's the big question. What is this talking about? What is in view in this description of Zion? I'll just confess to you, and I'll take a couple minutes to do this, that this is a text that I have struggled with for all 16 and a half years of full-time preaching. I am sure when I was a teenager, I sat right over there and Mr. Steve spelled it out perfectly, and I just wasn't listening that day. Because I have constantly struggled with what is going on in this text. I mean, when he talks about Zion and angels and God, is he talking about heaven? Is this a picture of a glorious place that exists purely in the spiritual? And if he's talking about heaven, is he talking about heaven as it was when the letter was written in the first century? Or is he talking about heaven as it is while we sit here tonight? Or is he really just talking about what heaven's going to be for everyone one day? Is that the idea of Mount Zion? And I tell you, and I really appreciate song selections tonight, just about every song in your songbook on Zion has their mind made up. This is a picture of a place called heaven. We are marching where, folks? To Zion. We're marching to Zion. We talk about Zion's call sweetly rings, bidding us look to what? Realms above. Heaven is this spiritual, heavenly place. Zion is, and that's where we're trying to go. Well, is that the idea here? Or is it something else? Is it more of a description of the spiritual world that is among us here on earth and in our presence today? Or is it both? Or is it neither? I've really been struggling with this, as I said, for a super long time, so I sort of preached around it. Until about maybe 10 years ago, I thought, okay, I give up. I don't know. So I think I called Steve, and Steve's never given me a fish in my life, and he didn't give me one that day either. He just said, go study and get back to me, and I said, okay. So I remember going into my library and trying to find books on Hebrews by guys that I trusted, guys that I thought would really help me understand what is Mount Zion, and more importantly, maybe, what's that supposed to mean for me? And so I laid out 10. I mean, that was going to solve my problem, right? 10 commentaries. Has that ever solved your problem? So here's what I ended up with. I ended up with 4 guys totally sure it was talking about heaven. No doubt about it. I ended up with 3 guys who were totally sure it was talking about something that exists for the Christian on earth today. And I witnessed what's left. 3 guys you could literally see scratching their heads while they wrote it. And I came out knowing that there was not continuity in that. So I didn't preach a sermon that Sunday. So a few years passed. And I had a super brilliant idea. I was preaching in Baytown, and we had a summer guy, John Banning. A lot of you may know John. John was in for his second summer, so I said, John, here's what I'd like for you to do this week. I want you to go in your office over there and take the whole week and study Hebrews 12, 22 through 24, and do not come out of your room, son, until you can explain to me what this is about. And I don't remember the exact details, but it was something like this. I don't know. Go ahead and tell me. He came out 3 days later. He didn't know, and my plan backfired, and I didn't know either. Well, that went along for a while until this year. Something really neat that we get to be a part of every summer, at least the last 3 or 4 summers, I've had the opportunity to go to the Timberland Drive Church in Lufkin and just work with the young people for 3 days. The adults come. It's great. But they always pick super challenging, like Old Testament themology, typography, things that say ology and ography. And that's what I study with them. So we did a series in 2016 on the temples of God, the dwelling of God, not in heaven, but the dwelling places of God among men. And when we got done with that series, they said, next year, let's talk about mountains and carry that theme onward. And I said right off the bat in 2016, I will preach for you Hebrews 12, 22 through 24. And I went home and I lost sleep for 9 months. And this year, I've been digging in, folks. And not only are the findings something that I carry confidence in and look forward to sharing with you tonight, but I believe it will make an acute and absolute difference in the way you live your life every single day and the way you experience and interact with your God. Hebrews chapter 12, you have come to Mount Zion. Now, in order to do this, we need to study the text itself. It's almost as if Hebrews 12 is its own mountain. In the first 22 verses, you sort of start at the base of a mountain and you march your way up towards the top for 22 verses. And then right there in that latter portion, you're on Zion, and then you sort of march down the backside. And so that's the way we're going to look at it. I'm preaching in Humble, Texas at the Humble Church of Christ tonight. So I know you guys have never heard this phrase before, but we're going to look at context and harmony tonight. We're going to see how well that benefits us in our study. Let's back up a little bit. We're not ready to talk about this in verse 22. We need to see a few things that get introduced a lot earlier. So pick up with me in Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin. Well, let me just say this. No matter what you think about Mount Zion when we're done tonight, if we agree on the conclusions of what it is about, here are a few things that are absolute truths from this chapter. One is this. Christians must face trials with their focus on Jesus. Whatever difficulties you are called to face, and everyone in the room experiences different problems, the answer to finding the strength to face those will be a complete and intense focus on Jesus, his authorship of faith, the suffering that he endured, the glory that he now possesses. We will need to keep our eyes on him to make it through. Now, just one quick additional question before we move on in our reading. Can you fix your eyes on Jesus here and now? Or do you have to wait until one day you get to heaven to fix your eyes on Jesus? You know how I feel about it? Just like you do. I fix my eyes on Jesus every day I live in His church. I think about the implications of what He done and what He has done in His power and in His glory and the fight that we have before us. A few things I want you to see before we get anywhere near any mountains tonight. And that's the first one. We have to focus on Jesus to make it. Here's a second thing. Pick up with me in verse 4 again. In Hebrews chapter 12 in verse 4, we read again, "You have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood in your striving against sin, and you have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by Him. For those whom the Lord loves, He disciplines, and He scourges every son whom He receives. It is for discipline that you endure." Now I'll stop the reading there. But if you've done some sort of marking in this section, you know that discipline occurs in verse 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 11. This entire section is talking about discipline. So here's a second absolute fact from Hebrews chapter 12. Times of struggle will come. Challenges will arise. Number one, keep your focus on everything you know about the glory and workings of Jesus. And number two, know that it just may be the work of the Lord in your life. Discipline comes at the hand of the Lord, the need to test us and shape us and reprove us and change us. We experience the presence of God in our lives in many ways here and now tonight. And one of those ways are trials and the shapings of God and the way that He works. Now, I'm not particularly a fan of the two things I put behind me here. I don't like trials, and I don't like being disciplined, but I appreciate how God the Son and God the Father can get me through that. And God can shape me into something that is more useful for His purpose. Here's a third thing. We don't have to do this by ourselves. We have people to do this with us to help us. So if I move down a little bit further, I'll pick up in verse 12. "Therefore, strengthen the hands that are weak and the knees that are feeble, and make straight paths for your feet so that the limb which is lame may not be put out of joint, but rather be healed. Pursue peace with all men and the sanctification without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springs up causing trouble and by it many be defiled." Now, there are two phrases in particular I want you to see. The idea of strengthening the hands of one another in verse 12, and the idea of seeing to it that no one falls short. Here's a third observation from Hebrews chapter 12. We must keep growing, keep working, keep pushing forward. We do it tonight with our eyes on Jesus. We do it tonight by understanding the presence of God and His hand of discipline shaping us. And we do it tonight by the encouragement and the support and the involvement of God's people in your life. I'm going to ask you this question again, and maybe I'm telescoping a little bit. Are you waiting for that? Who here is waiting? And so they finally get to heaven and they get to enjoy the support and encouragement of God's people. Anybody? I sure hope not. You enjoy that now, don't you? This is a part of how we make it through our journey here and the challenges that come. So I'll say again, no matter what we see in this next section and how you determine to categorize the imagery of the mountain that is called Zion, please note these three things are so. And God the Son and God the Father and God's people will help you through. So that brings us down in our text to something that relates to our imagery. I'm talking about verse 18. How am I going to do these three things? I will not say that this is easy and comes natural to all of us. Trials and tribulations and struggles and growing are hard. What's my motivation to keep me focused on my journey? Well, he doesn't start by saying, your motivation is Zion. That's not how he begins. That's verse 22. We're not there yet. He starts by saying, well, let me just tell you guys this. Your motivation is not Sinai. How about that? You've got great tasks in your life, and you have not come. Look in verse 18. You have not come to Mount Sinai. Let's read that first. Verses 18 through 21. You have not come to a mountain that can be touched, and to a blazing fire, and to darkness and gloom and whirlwind and to the blast of a trumpet and the sound of words which sound was such that those who heard begged that no further word be spoken to them. For they could not bear the command, if even a beast touches the mountain, it will be stoned. And so terrible was the sight that Moses said, I am full of fear and trembling. So his first point here is, celebrate the fact that you're not being asked to do these things having come to Mount Sinai. Now listen, I would not dare to stand here and belittle the Mount Sinai experience. The sound of the trumpets, the voices there, the gloom and the doom and the things that they experienced. But I think that in a sense, that's exactly what the author is doing. He's saying, I'm going to tell you about something so much greater than Sinai that the first thing I need you to see is that it was not glorious enough to get you where you need to go. Let me suggest to you a few things that you might see in the reading here about Sinai. Number one, you have not come there. And here's why you're better off than they were. First of all, there were all kinds of limitations with Mount Sinai. Do you notice in verse 18 that it says, you have not come to a mountain that can be touched, a physical place mountain. Mount Sinai is a physical place located in the Middle East, and it is there in that one space. But that's the only place where it is. If you, or let's say Todd and I, we like to hang out together. Todd and I decide we want to go to Mount Sinai. We want to experience the Sinai moment. And so we get on a plane. It takes us about a day and a half to get there. And we've got to go to one spot. It's not here. It's only there. So we fly over there. And if it's where I think it is, we're going to have to sneak under a fence. It's on the east, Eastern Fork. It's another study. And we're going to get there. And when we get to Sinai and we look at it, what are we going to see? A big old rock with a point at the top. We've got to go over there. It's not here. It's not wherever you go. It wouldn't follow the people. It was limited to one space. And the problem is, it was limited in time to how long? Do you guys remember? 1 year. So the problem is, we missed it by a few thousand years, 3,500-ish years. In order to experience the presence of God upon it and the relationship that was made possible, we would have to have been in one place during 1 year. It's burdened with limitations, and in fact, so many so that it wouldn't help you today. It wouldn't help the first century Christian to fight the temptations and work their way through growth, and it won't help you either. Zion is greater because Sinai was limited by the time it was glorified and the space. But here are some other things about it. It was also limited in terms of fellowship and faith. What happens at Sinai? I want you to imagine you're there. You're an Israelite. You've been delivered from bondage. You've been led to this mountain. God is there on the mountain. There's no doubt about it. A tabernacle of God among men is the top of this mountain. And there He is. And here you are. And God says, do not touch the mountain. What do you mean? I came here to be with you. And God said, the mountain's holy. I'm in a holy place. You do not touch the mountain. Animals do not touch the mountain. You cannot touch it or you will die. If even a beast touches it. God kept some form of separation between Himself on His mountain and the people down below. And it seems to me one of the reasons He did that was because of the fickleness of their faith. They were hardly ever a people devoted to righteousness. In fact, they can't even accept the fact that even if a beast touches the mountain, it will be stoned. They don't even like that law that God has given them. The relationship between God and Israel was constantly under strain of their faithlessness. And really, you know from the stories that a lot of times He only kept them around because of the messianic promise of Jesus. That kept them going many times. So there's all kinds of sort of separations between God on the mountain and the people who couldn't touch it and their faith while they're building some golden calf down there and can't even wait 40 days. No, if you're going to walk in great faith, you need a better experience than the limitations of time, space, fellowship, and faith of the Sinai year. Here's a third thing we could add to that. It was also limited in tone. What do you think about when you read the story of the Exodus? And God's people who'd just been rejoicing so much earlier in Exodus 15, and they come to this mountain, and notice it with me again. What was it like there? Do you think there was a lot of smiling and singing and rejoicing? It doesn't kind of have that feel to it, does it? It reads more like, You have not come to a mountain that can be touched, to a blazing fire, to darkness and gloom and whirlwind and the blast of the trumpet and words sounding so fervently in their ears that they put their hands over their ears and couldn't listen to it. It doesn't sound like a healthy relationship to me. There was strain in that. The tone was a tone of fear. The only way that the Israelites through their history responded to a relationship with God is when they were under threat of death. And they had to change. And that's why so many of the things that happened to them, portions of them would die and then they would restore their faith. They're motivated by the terror of the sounds and the cracklings. And the tone is very fear-driven. Let me just tell you something. If you and I were Israelites and we had been freed from bondage and led to Mount Sinai, can I just ask you this question? After seeing all of that, would you have done what God told you to do? Yes. I would have been terrified. The sound would have been overwhelming, and I would have done what God told me to do. But here's the point in Hebrews 12. You have not come to something with all those limitations. You have come to something better than that, something greater. And that's where we find ourselves in verse 22. In verse 22, the Bible says, "You have come to Mount Zion." Now, does that mean that you have actually come to this place that you read about in verses 22, 23, and 24? Or is it saying one day you will come there? I will tell you now, my argument is sort of like yes to that. That the encompassing magnitude of Mount Zion is bigger than all of these limitations. It is not limited by space. Do these things exist in heaven? Oh yeah, no doubt about it. Do these things exist in the Lord's church among God's people here and now? They most certainly do. Is this today or is it tomorrow or is this what eternity is going to be like? Yes. The glory of Mount Zion is bigger than any limitation of heaven or earth, here or later. It is all things. It is greater. It is all encompassing. And in this case, we do not stand separate the mountain and cannot touch it. The text says you have come to it. And on it, verse 23, is the church. God's people are a part of it. They are enrolled there. They will be there. The fellowship tone is entirely different. It's not, I'm on the mountain and you stay over there. It's, you're my people. And you live by great faith, and I want you to come up upon the mountain with me and enjoy all the benefits that are found therein. And the tone is entirely different. Mount Zion that comes down out of heaven in the glory of what Jesus has produced for us is not covered with doom and darkness and gloom and fire, but with open arms of welcome, a blood that created for us an access to the Lord. So what I want to talk about for the remainder of our study tonight is considering that Mount Zion extends all the way from the glorious place where you know God is, but you can come to it tonight. It extends itself beyond there to even here. Let me give you a couple of indicators that will help with that. We have Mount in verse 22. I'm going to skip forward just a little bit to verse 28. In Hebrews chapter 12 and in verse 28, therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe. The term kingdom is used there, and I know you studied that a time or two in this church building, once or twice. When we talk about kingdom, let me ask you a couple questions. Is the kingdom the rule and the dominion of the Lord? Is it in heaven? You can do this or this. It's okay. Is that in heaven? Just walk down here a minute. There. Is the rule and glory and dominion of God existent in heaven? Yes. Is the kingdom, rule, glory, and protection of God existing here and now in this building tonight? Yes. The unshakable kingdom is greater than Mount Sinai in every possible way, any direction you want to take it. And one of the things about it is it expands from the throne room out unto the glory of your life in this town tonight. Here's another text that really helps us with that. I told you we would only leave Hebrews a time or two. One of those times is a trip back to the book of Daniel. I want you to go back with me to Daniel. It would be really interesting if there was a prophet from long before Jesus established all of this who would connect the idea of a mountain and the kingdom and its coming. And we have that in Daniel chapter 2. Do you remember the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had and the different elements that made up the statue and how they represented four kingdoms? You remember that clearly. And in the days of the fourth kingdom, what we know to be the Roman kingdom, out would come a stone not touched by hands, and it would strike the statue and it would fall. Now, we're kind of given the ending of that in verse 44. Are you in Daniel chapter 2? In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed. And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms, but it will itself endure. Now, that makes a lot of sense to the Christian. And I know the member of this church, you've studied it often. In the days of the Roman kingdom, something of great kingdom magnitude got established. They would extend in every direction and outlast every other kingdom. But listen to the dream back in verse 34. Verse 34. You continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and crushed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, the gold were crushed all at the same time and became like chaff from the summer threshing floor, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that had struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Can I tell you about Mount Zion? It's in heaven. It's on earth. It's today. It's tomorrow. It is everywhere. It is made accessible for everyone. The mountain is grand in every possible description and definition. So go back with us to our text again then. In Hebrews chapter 12, we started at the foot of the mountain of Hebrews 12 and we read up to know that we've got these challenges. But what I'm starting to be heartened by is that I'm not waiting to one day have access to Jesus or one day be shaped by God or one day have the encouragement of brethren. I have it now. I get it today. This mountain and the extension of its blessings comes even into our lives. So then we get the list. And the list begins in verse 22. You have come to Mount Zion. Now you're about to read a series of things. What we have to determine is, what are these things? And more importantly tonight, where are they? So let's start like this. Well, when you start talking about coming to Mount Zion, wherever it is, here's what you're going to find when you get there, no doubt about it. You are going to find the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. Isn't that awesome? I want to go there. I want to go now. I want to go to the mountain where upon the sturdy structure there is this city that, of course, is filled with heavenly people, this Jerusalem from heaven. Now, here's a trivia question for you. The heavenly Jerusalem, is it in heaven? Or has it come here? Open your Bibles with me to Revelation 21. I told you just a departure or two along the way. Revelation 21 counts as one of those. In Revelation chapter 21, beginning in verse 1, it talks about this city of the living God, this heavenly Jerusalem. And it says in verse 1, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband." Look in verse 10. "He carried me away in the spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God." Is the city in heaven? Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. The glory of the city is in heaven with Zion, but has the city of God with the protective walls and the glory of its structure. Has it come down out of heaven and been made accessible for all of God's people? I believe that it has. We're talking about something that is true of heaven, and it's also true right here, right now, tonight. I am not waiting to experience the glory of the protection of the city of God. I live in it, and you should live in it as well. Go back to our text. Let me show you some other things. You might say, well, okay, maybe I'll give you that one, since there's that Revelation 21 business, and it sort of looks like what's up there is coming here and can be experienced in both ways. But what are you going to do with this, Chris? This is clearly talking about heaven. Remember what I told you? Zion's peak is in heaven. There's no doubt about that. There are myriads of angels there. They are encompassed all around the throne, maybe at this very hour. And wouldn't it be great to one day, watch me now, live in the presence of the angels. To have angels all around you. Maybe even have specific angels set aside as your ministering spirits. Wouldn't it be awesome to have that? Well, I tell you, if you would put angels around me to serve as myriads of ministering spirits, I'd be faithful all the time. And that's what it's going to be like when I get to heaven. Can I just surprise you with something? The angels are here. In Hebrews chapter 1, look with me back in our text. They are there and they are here. In Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14, it's beyond our ability to see with our eyes. It's beyond our ability to explain in detail. But in Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 14, it's talking about angels, verse 13, no question. Are they not all ministering spirits sent out to render service for the sake of those who will inherit salvation? Are you waiting for that? I am not. I have that in Jesus tonight. Ministering spirits are in the glorious place called heaven, and they are amongst us working in ways that we cannot explain to the betterment of our journey and to the strengthening of our salvation. Myriads of angels. Go back to Hebrews chapter 12, please. Following this, it gives this list. The general assembly, the church of the firstborn. If you're asking me, when we get to heaven one day, will there be a general assembly and the church, will the church be there? The answer, of course, is yes. In heaven one day, the church will be there. But here's my question. Where's the church right now? It is here. It is you. It is me. We are on Mount Zion. We are a part of the church. We are a part of the general assembly. We get the support of those who are around us here and now. And one day we will experience it in another way when we get to heaven. Where are we going with all this? I just think there are so many Christians, friends, family members, who walk through this life as if they're devoid of the list you see behind me. I don't have that. I don't have the church. I don't have the angels. I don't have the city. I don't have God. But one day, if I can really drudge through this thing and not mess up too much, one day I'm going to get to experience all of the glorious things that the mountain has to offer. I hope that you do not leave here feeling that way, nor ever feel that way again. Everything that is provided on that mountain is accessible to you. And can be your encouragement and your strength tonight and for the rest of your mortal walk and enjoyed in a glorious, spiritual, indifferent way in heaven one day. Is God in heaven? Yes. Will He judge those who are there when they approach? Absolutely. But is God here? He is. Is God's judgment here? It is. Is God shaping me and disciplining me and working me over? He is. I experience the presence of God today. He is here. He is always in the room. And He is working and shaping as the great judge who watches over all. A couple more things. What about these? You say, well, I don't know about this. Okay, so the church, I get that. It's here, it's there. God is definitely here and there. But then you have the spirits of the righteous made perfect. You have come to a mountain upon which the spirits of the righteous have been made perfect. Now, there are just a couple of ways to examine this text. In one sense, when we all get to heaven, we will be made perfect in these perfect spiritual bodies. But this word can also very much apply to the spiritual condition that you're enjoying in Jesus, even as you sit there tonight. We've been made pure, complete, perfect, and whole. We experience spirits that are right with God, connected with God, and upon the mountain of protection of the Lord. We have that now. And if you want something that really put it all together for me, it was these last two things. What if I told you that you're going to have to wait? I don't know how long, how many years, or how hard it's going to be. But if you really wait long enough and you work hard enough, one day you get to come to Jesus. One day you get, verse 24, to experience the new covenant and to be sprinkled by His blood, which is better than any other blood there ever was. One day you get to do that. What would you tell me? Chris, I have that already. I've already made my connection with Jesus. I've been baptized in water and raised up, sprinkled with the power of His blood. I am someone who is living under the guidelines and glorifications of the new covenant. You're not waiting to come to Jesus, folks. He's already here. And you should already be there. This is a picture of power. It's a picture of the constancy of Christ, and it should be an encouragement to every Christian. I want to challenge you to do something in the morning. Even if you don't follow me on some of these points tonight, I know you'll continue to study. That's the great thing about the Word. Why don't you try this in the morning? If I was asked to sort of put this together, all I can do is tell you what I do. Tomorrow morning, when you walk out your front door, I want you to stop and imagine that in front of you is the largest mountain you've ever seen. It extends so far left and right that you can't see anything but mountainous terrain. And all the way up to the top, you don't even know if it's a cloudy day or not, because the mountain extends in every direction. And I want you to look up at the top of that mountain and see the throne scene depicted for us in Revelation 4 and 5. You should see the Father sitting on His throne. You should see Jesus sitting at His right hand. You should see the creatures, the living creatures and the elders and the angels, and they're worshiping Him. And you should say, that's heaven. That's where I'm going. I'm not there, but that's where I'm going. But after that, I want you to bring your eyes down a little bit, and I want you to see that the angels keep coming. They keep coming down the mountain. And so do souls. And all over the middle portion of this mountain are these souls who have died. They've gone before you. They're not the martyrs that are there at the throne, but they're all these countless other, these hundreds of thousands of Christians who have died over the years. And I want you to see all of their souls and angels and souls all in every direction upon the mountain. And I want you to say, I'm not there yet. That's where I'm going. And then I want you to look down at eye level. And I want you to see more souls, Christians, friends, brothers and sisters in Christ. They're on the mountain too, but they're still alive. They're Mr. Jonathan Bernard. Hey, Jonathan, I'm going to see you in the morning about 8:30. He's on the mountain and I see him, and I still see angels. There are angels working and moving about, and there are Christians all around. And then most importantly of all, I want you to look down. I want you to imagine that that mountain that extends from the throne room comes all the way out through the abyss of those who have died, all the way into the lives of Christians. And do one thing for me tomorrow morning. Do it for you. Make sure that your feet are on that mountain. How ridiculous is it that God would extend a mountain so far, so vastly, so beautifully, the kingdom and the power of Jesus, and make it greater than Sinai and everything else that's ever come. And there would be people who would see all of that and look down and not be on that mountain. How could that be? The only thing I can think of is they just haven't seen it yet. They don't understand its presence. Make sure that you are standing on the mountain of God, surrounded by God's people who encourage you, God who shapes you, and Jesus, upon whom you can train your sight to study and grow by His example. Here's our last thing we want to talk about. Are you in the text? I'm going to read verses 25 through 29, leave you with a couple of ideas. See to it that you do not refuse Him who is speaking. For if those who did not escape when they refused Him who warned them on earth, much less will we escape who turn away from Him who warns from heaven. And His voice shook the earth then, but now He has promised, saying, yet once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heaven. This expression, yet once more, denotes the removing of the things which can be shaken as of created things, so that those things which cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we receive a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us show gratitude by which we may offer to God an acceptable service with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. How will you know if you've done it right? How will you know if you have seen the mountain of God before you? and have understood its size and its magnitude relative to everything else that exists in this life, it's pretty easy. Here are a couple things that are going to naturally happen from the text. Number one, you are going to be a person so absolutely overwhelmed with gratitude that you're probably going to have a very distracted day tomorrow. Because the first thought that will come to mind and some of the first words that will come out of your mouth is the gratitude that you have, the thankfulness that any of this exists, that God built this for me, that He extended it to me, that it's greater than anything that's ever been. And we will be a people who fear. Yes, there is no question about the fear factor, but it will not be terror at the gloom and the darkness. It will be reverence. What He can build. And where He resides at the apex. And the glory that He possesses. You want to know if you're in contact with Mount Zion and you've seen its presence? Measure your gratitude and overwhelming thankfulness at the blessings of God in your life. And how much you revere just knowing you're in His presence. And that He is there with you. Well, what is that supposed to do? Is that just sort of an emotional exercise, Chris? I just sort of get up tomorrow and I feel thanksgiving and gratitude and I kind of go around smiling all day. That's not everything that's in this text. Then it says, do not refuse Him. Oh, there's the real test. Your imagination won't be the end of it. Nor a prayer of thanksgiving. But will I be someone, verse 25, who will not refuse Him who is speaking? There are people in the room tonight whom God has pronounced His will for their lives. God is speaking. And there may just be some who have not been listening to His voice. You have not seen Zion in such a case. When our gratitude is overwhelming, we will not refuse Him. We will offer, I'm talking about verse 28, we will offer an acceptable service with reverence and awe. We will serve Him. We will feel so privileged to be a part of something so unbelievable. We will devote the rest of our lives to serving our fellow kingdom citizens and marching our way up towards the gates of the abode that lies ahead. Is that you tonight? Are you thankful for what God has built and that He's extended it even to you? And are you willing to listen to the words that He has taught you, hear His instruction, and serve Him through obedience? If we can help you do that, becoming a